I'm the sports professor, Rick Haro, and welcome to Beyond the Scoreboard, the inside look at the endorsement, business, law, marketing, deal-making issues in the trillion-dollar sports business for you, the fan, and you, the New England sports fan as well. And why wouldn't it be a significant time for activity? The NHL and NBA playoffs, first round, second round, depending on how lucky you are. The NFL, the draft, a league that never sleeps. Major League Baseball, ending of the first month of the season. Got NASCAR cranking up. You got the golf business after its first major going to its second. The business is more robust than it's ever been. The bottom line is a lot of issues for marketing, legal, business, law, all especially affecting the New England sports fan. As always, if you want to see the published list of the top 15, look at csnne.com. And if you want to subscribe to our iTunes feed and also look for us on Stitcher, Google Play, Audio Boom. You get the whole list of 15. And you get a special issue today. Bob Bowman, President, Business and Media, Major League Baseball, talks about the growth of the business, the growth of the Red Sox, and the growth of everything baseball domestically and globally. But first, let's look at some of the issues around all of the leagues today, how they affect the New England fan as well. First of all, look at the NBA. Well, postseason well underway, and MVPs are fighting it out. Is it Russell Westbrook? Is it James Harden? Well, the MVP index company, the ePoll market research firm, takes a look at the relative value of the MVPs. And you start with MVP Steph Curry of the Golden State Warriors. His e-score celebrity data is 50% times 5 higher than the next MVP, the Falcons quarterback Matt Ryan. And with the 2017 race, a two-man contest between Westbrook and Harden, ePoll found that Westbrook's 56% appeal, 10 points higher than Harden's, whose awareness is 13 points higher than Westbrook's, probably due in part with an earlier relationship with Khloe Kardashian. I hope she could teach him how to make free throws and other stuff. We'll leave that for another day. Both men fall well short of Curry's pre-MVP appeal score of 72% during last season. And my take is this year's winner's got to wait to see if there's a similar effect. Their current and would-be sponsors likewise be dramatically affected by the award. And it's about stability and about consistency, as Tom Brady will attest. It's not whether you win once, it's whether you win many, many, many times. So the NBA clearly looking at some of these issues, but the NHL has some issues as well, but it's also an NBA or NHL one when you look at Seattle. AEG submitted a proposal of more than $500 million, as well as the Oakview Group, and eventually attracting NBA and NHL teams to Seattle. $564 million for the OVG proposal and $520 for AEG. The arena renovation could be done by October 2020. Tim Lywicki, who's involved with OVG, says we're going to do this and stand on our own 2 feet, and we believe by doing it, it'll give Seattle a best chance of getting one or two teams. The group includes Madison Square Garden, Live Nation, primarily focused on turning the venue into a concert specialist like the Forum. That bid supported by the band Pearl Jam, by the way, iconic since they once sued Live Nation over monopolistic ticketing practices. You want change? Wait 20 years. Yeah, that's NBA or NHL. We know Seattle is a tremendous corporate city and losing the Thunder, then the Sonics to Oklahoma City. But bottom line is you get a new arena, those issues absolutely positively go away. What about the NHL specifically? Well, remember last year, no Canadian teams made the playoffs. This year, 5. And Rogers Media expecting a $1 billion reversal. The deal, a 12-year deal at $5.2 billion over that span. And last year, TV ratings 51 to 61% during the NHL postseason. They fell. The 12-year deal needed a resurgence. The Leafs, Canadiens, Senators, Oilers, and Flames. And obviously, we talk about the Senators relative to the Bruins. They led this resurgence, and they see hockey audiences back in the seven-figure range. Also good for the NHL. Canada traditionally represents one of hockey's most fervent fan bases, and the Ottawa Senators notwithstanding. I guess we can't say that. That's maybe a dirty word here a little bit. But how about the NFL? The NFL continues to grab the headlines, even though don't look now, but we're 4 months away from the season. St. Louis in court, officially suing the NFL over the relocation of the Rams' 15 months ago. They sued all 32 teams individually and the NFL. Damages and restitution profits. Plaintiffs claim the Rams and the NFL made intentionally false statements, unjustly enriched. The city lost about $7.5 million in property taxes, $1.5 million in sales tax revenue, millions in earning taxes since the Rams moved to L.A. NFL now getting ready to defend itself and its franchises, expected to remain in the Missouri court system because the Chiefs operate in Missouri. Unlikely the lawsuit will move to federal court. Defendants without a clear connection to a given state are more likely to get a more fair shake, but that doesn't happen. It's also unlikely this lawsuit will result in compensation of St. Louis if past history is any guide. We thought we were over this, and we thought that the Patriots wouldn't have to deal with this as well as the other 31 teams, but they're going to. How about some other NFL issues? Well, you take a look at some of the bigger ones that are off the field. How about arm wrestling? NFL players who competed in the inaugural Pro Football Arm Wrestling Championship in Vegas without pre-approval violated the league's rules against gambling. The competition already took place, but is set to air on CBS over two weekends in May. James Harrison, Kenny Stills, Marshawn Lynch, Marquette King, Marquise Pouncey, Mario Edwards, and others. First prize at 100 grand, half going to charity in the winning player's name. Some players spoke out against the impending fines, noting the irony of how the NFL just approved a team in Vegas, yet players can't go there for a charity event. Here's the take. The NFL always goes to extreme lengths to protect the shield. We've seen that in New England, obviously, and this incident is absolutely no different. Well, how about off the field again, but scene shifts to Arizona? They got 9 years, the Cardinals do, on their current naming deal with the University of Phoenix, but they're in a hunt to find a new stadium sponsor. They're shopping the naming rights, and University of Phoenix retains the title unless the team finds a replacement. But regardless of finding a new partner, the university remains an official team sponsor. University of Phoenix has been the only naming partner since the Cardinal Stadium opened in 2006. 20-year deal, $154.5 million if carried through to the end of the term. The team noted it's handling the sponsorship search internally. And following the trend of other teams in the region, the Cardinals might soon follow the Diamondbacks, the Suns, the Coyotes, and franchises that have all changed their stadium sponsors in recent years. The Cardinals may want to consider reaching out to the other thriving for-profit university headquartered in the market but growing internationally, Grand Canyon University. But we'll have to see how that all shakes out, and we'll also have to see long-term if the Cardinals actually make the shift. How about the Buccaneers? Many teams have been reluctant to reveal their inner workings to the public, but the Buccaneers will be selected, the rumor has it, for Hard Knocks, and they're excited about it. The Bucs believe they're among the top candidates to be chosen. And speaking about the prospect, team co-chair Joel Glazer said, "Our players are at a point in their maturity they'd be able to handle it. We'll always be supportive of the league. Nobody's rushing to the podium for that necessarily, but I do feel I have great confidence in this team, and executives firmly believe that Hard Knocks would be a good way for Tampa and the surrounding fan base to get to know the team on a more personal level. And after multiple seasons, the NFL generally feels that Hard Knocks participation is a plus for its teams, or they'd have put a stop to it long ago." Don't bother knocking on Bill Belichick's door, by the way. I think we already know the answer. Well, how about the draft? The NFL migrated around multiple cities over the past few years, but New York thinks it's time to bring it back. New York expressed interest in hosting the draft in 2019 and beyond. This year's draft in Philly outdoors. The last 2 years, downtown Chicago. New York said to be one of the multiple cities vying the land to land the rights to host. Other cities, Philly, again, Canton, Ohio, the Hall of Fame, Dallas, Denver, Kansas City, Green Bay, Jacksonville, and L.A. Radio City Music Hall appears to be the likely location to host the draft if it does wind up being held in NYC. To the general onlooker, it may not seem that hosting the NFL draft is a big deal, but it's actually become as competitive as hosting the Super Bowl, thanks to a positive economic impact it generates. And here's the take. It's also the second most important tentpole event on the now year-round NFL calendar, and the league does not take its locale lightly. Expect the draft circus to continue to travel for this foreseeable future, and look for the Patriots, potentially, to get back in the mix. It certainly is significant economic impact for all concerned. Finally, you can't talk baseball without talking the Cubs. They not only have a new World Series banner to show off, but a newly renovated Wrigley Field. The Cubs used their home opener against the Dodgers to debut the park at Wrigley, just one piece of the still under-renovation stadium project. Large video screen on the team's new office building showed the Cubs' historic 10-inning victory against the Indians during the Dodgers game and showed off part of a third phase of the $750 million Wrigley Field upgrade. There was also a ceremony marking the opening of what the Cubs refer to as Wrigleyville's new town square and a year-round gathering place for neighbors, families, fans, and visitors. Cubs chair Tom Ricketts and his real estate company designed, built, and financed the park at Wrigley, and the take is it should now allow the community to more deeply engage with the team, kind of like, by the way, Fenway and the area around Fenway that the Red Sox built with significant care does for the greater New England and Boston areas. And baseball, as we know, continues to grow. Revenues continue to increase. The teams with tremendous stability, unprecedented labor peace. Rob Manfred took his stamp way past Bud Selig. Momentum continues to be generated. And let's not forget that really significant feature that sets baseball apart from all other leagues, which is a unified and credible and vertically integrated media, advanced media. Major League Baseball Advanced Media. Bob Bowman, appointed president, business and media of MLB by Commissioner Manfred on December 4, 2014, and he directs revenue-generating and media rights activities across all entities, MLB AM, MLB Network, MLB Advanced Media. He's been president of MLB Advanced Media since its inception in 2000, and it was created then with all 30 owners voting to centralize all of baseball's internet and interactive media operations under one roof. At Bat, which is a tremendous app, everybody uses it, and by the way, if you don't, you should. It captures, encodes, and distributes more than 30,000 live video events, and the company has gotten so prolific at what they do that the NHL has actually asked them to take their business programs and take it to another level. So this has become an internet business, not just an arm of baseball. The guy graduated from Harvard College and later received his MBA from Wharton. He serves as president of the Michigan Education Trust and members of the board of directors of Take-Two Interactive Corp. and Vince Holding Corp. A very successful businessman, he talks about the internet, baseball, the Red Sox, and life. Bob Bowman.
The cacophony's died down a little bit, Rick Haro, Sloan MIT Analytics. We're through lunch. Everybody's still trying to sell the people on my right varying degrees of intensity. Bob Bowman, people are really trying to sell you hard because everybody wants something from you because you are probably the most successful, proven internet guru of any team sport and probably the most successful on the planet. How's that for a starter?
Well, I don't think any of that's true, but I'll tell you what. It's like being a rich kid. If you get born to rich parents, it's a lot easier. We have great content. Baseball was ideally made for the digital world. We play every day, so it's part of your habit. Big advantage. You can come to the third inning, come to the seventh inning. It's a lot of fun because the narrative's not usually the final score. It's something else. So if you were inventing a sport for the digital age, you'd invent baseball.
Yeah. Let's assume, however, that 50% is content and the other 50% is light management. So when it's 2000 and you are now taking the helm of a semi-functional ship with 30 people rowing in somewhat different directions and you're told, organize, harmonize, make a lot of money, and make it look like a public company and make a lot of revenue. Easier said than done, you did it. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I wish I could tell you it was, you know, as hard as you're making it sound. The owners were behind us every step of the way. We had one commissioner, you know, who supported us, and now we have another commissioner who supports us. And so it would be a better story if I could tell you how difficult it was and all these hills we overcame. The simple fact was everyone wanted this to succeed. The owners as much as we, if not more so. And the players and the fans, everybody wanted it to succeed, and we were able to help, you know, not get in the way too much.
But the leap of faith, Bob Bowman, was in 2000 for you, whatever your numbers were you represented to the owners to have them take the leap of faith. There was a risk that the internet wouldn't be as sophisticated and as visionary and as fruitful as it's become. It's surpassed anybody's expectations as far as being able to deliver revenue.
Yeah, I think this. The internet has certainly surpassed a lot of the early prognostications. But my own view is you never bet against technology.
Right.
Whether it's in the automobile, whether it's in the home, or whether it's in your back pocket on a phone, you fight technology that's a losing fight. And so we always knew that we had a great game, and we always knew technology was on our side. What we didn't know, to be fair though, Rick, is it 2003 or 2006? Is it 2006 or 2009? But ultimately, we knew technology was going to be our biggest ally.
The idea of sports, live sports, stick and ball sports, being the ultimate reality show vis-a-vis the ability to archive and replay. But the internet is based on now the ability. My daughters, they don't know how to watch live television anymore. How do you reconcile all of that?
Yeah, I think we got to be really concerned about people like your daughter. Yeah. We can't assume that just because it's live, she will go right to the device we tell her to. Yeah. I think we're all worried about how do we make sure, and the commissioner worries about how do we distribute our product in every screen so your daughter and the daughter behind her can watch it on the screen of her choice, wherever she is, however she wants to do it. And if we don't do it, we really risk losing them. But I know our commissioner gets that, and we're working down that road. I think we've been successful so far in getting our games distributed.
Your other commissioner got it. Your current commissioner got it. They're part of the same coaching tree, so to speak. How easy and seamless has the transition been?
It's been great. I think the biggest difference for us who work for Rob is that he's there every day in New York. He does his homework. He reads the memos. He knows what he's doing. And so, as I said earlier today, you have to bring your A game to a meeting with him. He understands and he has a purpose there, and he leans forward. So it's refreshing. Commissioner Selig was great, but Commissioner, you know, Rob Manfred's the right guy now, and I think everyone's really excited about where baseball's going to be in 10 years.
What are the biggest challenges from the new media perspective that you face on a daily basis?
Well, I think we all face the same challenges, which is competition. And I don't mean from football or basketball. Right. I mean from everything else that's going on. You know, we worry about where the eyeballs are and how people engage and how they, you know, are they going to follow baseball instead of what we do. I think that's what we worry about. We wake up every day saying, how are we going to get 7, 10, 20 minutes of this person's time today and get the mind share and the time share on the device? That's what we worry about.
So, international audience, Reuters, how do we have new media help facilitate the inevitable Major League Baseball and other baseball penetration across the pond and everywhere else?
I think we're doing that. You know, we've distributed things digitally, but I think this commissioner has made international a real focal point for him. Tony Petitti runs the international group for us, and he's made it a real focal point to have international be there. So I think you're going to see the World Baseball Classic, which starts this week, this coming week. The commissioner's going to be there. He's going to be in the East to try and see these teams play, and we're going to culminate with our championship over on the West Coast. And I think that's a big thing. Developing these teams, developing baseball's, you know, the ability to play baseball in these countries is important, so people can see it and see it every day. But I also think, you know, getting the major league teams to play in Mexico or the UK, which Tony and the commissioner are working on, you have to show them the best product too. You have to develop from the ground up, but every now and then you got to show them the best product. This commissioner's made, I think, far more so than Commissioner Selig, this commissioner's made international development a vital part of his success.
Everybody around is obsessed with appealing to the new millennials, pace of play, all of those issues. Your job, by definition, is a classic poster child of appealing to new millennials because of devices. How does it all reconcile? Are you a voice of expediting play and the deal that was just done with Game of Thrones and all of the things to make sure it's more appealing to the young audience?
You know, I think our game is really good. I go to a lot of baseball games, and while I'm not a millennial, I've got a short attention span. And so I think our game is really good. And I think what the commissioner is trying to do is say, yep, we have a really good game, but we ought to be constantly and ever vigilant to try and take out sort of times that are slow. You know, whether it's, as he's talked about, whether it's, you know, mound visits, but right now it's the replay. And he's instituted a rule that says, after 2 minutes, if you can't reverse the call stands. Let's just, you know, you nibble at the fringes. You always want to be leaning forward to try and make it better. But make no mistake about it, our game is really good. 75 million people go to the stadiums every year. Hundreds of millions of people watch this game on TV every year. Obviously, hundreds of millions go connect with it digitally. So our game is in good shape. It doesn't, but that makes you ever vigilant to keep making it try trying to make it better.
Just a couple more. The media issues as they evolve. So I assume you reach out to a variety of the bosses, the owners, to get their different perspectives. I mean, John Henry now has a lot of New England audience. The Globe, newspapers,
right.
Old news, new news, the evolution of that. How does that process work?
You know, we have team, you know, John Henry has been in baseball since I've been in baseball. He used to own the Marlins, now he owns the Red Sox. But John Henry's a pretty typical owner in the sense that these folks are engaged. They really worry, almost all of them love baseball. So that is a passion of theirs. But they're really successful business people. These are not people who woke up and said, geez, let's go buy a baseball team. These are really smart business people that know how to run a business and are engaged in all the aspects of the business. So we're lucky in that way that we get to learn from them, and they give us advice, and we generally always figure out a way to get to the right place. But I think that's one thing I didn't anticipate, the benefits of the job that I have, is the valuable input that we get from owners saying, have you thought about this? Have you thought about that?
And he particularly, I mean, he buys a newspaper, and now he's attempting to make it relevant for the next 50 years.
Look where the Washington Post and New York Times have done. Their subscription levels are going through the roof. Yes. And I think he, once again, proved prescient. Just like he did with the Red Sox, bought it at the right time. He bought the Globe at the right time. And I think he's going to be very successful. He's been successful in almost everything he's done.
Final concept. You are now a full-service organization where the NHL contracts with you to generate some additional views, looks, strategy, service. Is that a long-term goal? Do you want to be all things to all people?
I think our thought is this, is that the more that there's good content that's streamed and on devices, the better chance baseball will have to succeed. Just being there by yourselves sounds great and sounds like you wouldn't have competition, but until people come to understand that live sports is going to look great on their phone, whether they happen to be a hockey fan, a basketball fan, or a football fan, that's a bad place. So we want all these sports streamed. We're going to get our share of audience. Our game does really well against all the other games, but we want people, every person, whether they're 6 or 76, we want them to understand, take out your phone, there's going to be a live sport that you love on it.
Let's remember that. And here's an example of the leverage that this guy brings to the table of running a fiefdom of 30 entities providing some amazing content. 8 minutes, up and out, 7:46. How was that? Was that good?
Well done. You should do this for a living.
Dude, forget it. I don't want to do it for a living. Thank you,
nice
my
to
friend.
See you.
Okay.
Take care.
Well, we'd like to thank Bob Bowman for sharing his insight into why Major League Baseball is so successful and why the Red Sox are so successful among the successful. Look for that to continue. That's our show for today. Remember to look at the 15 to watch on CSNNE.com. Join us with the iTunes feed. Subscribe to Stitcher, Google Play, Audio Boom, and just continue listening and watching. We'll have much more from the world of sports, business, law, and marketing. I'd like to thank Bob Bowman, Jason Levine, and Tanner Simpkins for helping us put this together. And thank you for watching and listening and joining us next week when once again we go Beyond the Scoreboard.